The Valley of the Kings, Egypt, November the 26th, 1922. Howard Carter was sweating. The Egyptian sun beat down mercilessly from the pale blue, cloudless sky overhead. The desert around him shimmered with heat haze and the erratic wind, rather than bringing a welcome breath of cool air, instead blasted his face and bare arms with stinging sand. But Howard Carter didn't care. He watched with hungry eyes as his workmen labored in the heat, clearing the last of the rubble from a set of hidden steps they had discovered, carved into the valley wall. This was it, he was sure this time. After so many years of scraping at rocks and sifting through sand, he'd finally found something. If he was right, a pharaoh's tomb lay beyond the doors at the bottom of those stairs. An ancient grave, piled high with the priceless treasures of Egyptian royalty. It was so close, he could almost touch it. A sudden silence brought Carter out of his daydream. The white-robed workmen had laid down their tools. The steps were clear. A smooth, plaster-covered doorway was revealed at the bottom. Carter hurried forward, ignoring the half-hidden, accusing glances that some of the local workers threw in his direction. For a few weeks now, there had been mutinous mutterings in the camp, whispers of curses, that what was dead was best left buried. Carter ran his fingers over the hieroglyphs that had been stamped into the plaster of the ancient door. He suddenly felt very cold, as though a shadow had passed over the sun, and the sweat was freezing on his body. His fingers were tingling where they had brushed the faded, engraved symbols, almost as though... Carter shook himself. This was no time for superstitious nonsense. History was about to be made. The Curse of the Pharaohs. A bite-sized fright. This series contains disturbing content. Listener discretion is advised. Carter glanced back over his shoulder. Most of the Egyptian laborers were watching him excitedly, grinning broadly with the anticipation of a great discovery. But more than a few had pinched, sour faces and glared at him with reproachful eyes. Carter hesitated. The mallet and chisel he was clutching suddenly felt impossibly heavy. The sun seemed to be radiating no heat at all. He shivered. Then his employer, the wealthy aristocrat Lord Carnarvon, strode up behind him, sweating heavily in his linen suit, his cane tapping on the tomb steps. "Well, Carter, what have we got?" The older man's eyes sparkled with excitement. Confidence flooded back into Carter's body. He gripped his hammer and chisel more tightly. "Let's find out." Very carefully, Carter placed his chisel in the top left corner of the plaster door and struck. A few more tentative blows, and a small hole was created in the stone. A breath of dry, fetid air, trapped in that tomb for over 3,000 years, billowed out into Carter's face. It smelt of old death and crumbled bone. For a second, Carter could have sworn he heard an almost human sigh escape into the desert, along with that ancient air. He shivered again, and then gestured impatiently for a candle. He held the flickering flame up to the hole and peered inside. At first, he could see nothing. The foul air that trickled from the tomb caused his candle to sputter and leap. Then his eyes grew accustomed to the gloom. And through the mist he saw the firelight glinting on gold. Everywhere there was gold, treasures, weapons, armor, golden chariots, a monstrous gilded lion. Carter could feel Lord Carnarvon shifting impatiently behind him.
"Well, Carter, can you see anything?"
"Yes," Carter breathed.
"Wonderful thing."
The Continental Savoy Hotel, Cairo, 5 months later. Lord Carnarvon swatted at a mosquito that was buzzing around his ear. The damnable creatures. He couldn't stand them. One of those tiny winged monsters had bitten him on the cheek out near the Pharaoh's tomb in Luxor. Then, while he was shaving, He'd accidentally slashed the angry, swollen lump the creature had left behind wide open. The wound had become horribly infected, and bloody painful as well. Carnarvon was no stranger to ill health. It had plagued him most of his life. This was something else. He felt weak beyond words. His very bones ached. Despite the fans that turned lazily on the ceiling above his bed, it was stiflingly hot in the hotel suite. Very slowly, painfully, he slid out of bed. He tottered across the room, threw open the balcony doors, and stepped out into the Egyptian night. It was no cooler out here, and the mosquitoes buzzed and whined about him in their endless search for blood. He waved one hand limply to try and fend them off, but that small effort made his vision swim. Below him, the lights of Cairo blurred and wheeled, and then, all of a sudden, winked out completely. The darkness was so complete that for a second Carnarvon thought he'd gone blind. He gripped the balcony rail to steady himself, then realized he could still see the crescent moon gleaming in the night sky. But the city itself was lifeless, swallowed in utter blackness. A fist of fear gripped his heart. Something was horribly wrong here. A fierce gust of desert wind suddenly howled across the darkened buildings. A kamasin, as the locals called such a storm. Bone dry, oppressively hot, and carrying billowing sheets of stinging sand. The ferocious gale plucked at Lord Carnarvon's nightclothes, sending him staggering backwards into the hotel room. His head was spinning. He tried to suck in a desperate breath. It was too weak. He struggled and gasped in vain. Blood roared in his ears. His legs buckled beneath him. He was dead before he hit the floor. On the 26th of November 1922, Howard Carter made one of the greatest archaeological discoveries of all time when he uncovered the tomb of legendary ancient Egyptian pharaoh, the boy king, Tutankhamun. The wondrous treasures and magnificent sarcophagus he found inside the burial chamber captured the imaginations of people across the world and sparked a newfound craze for Egyptology. However, before long, the discovery became overshadowed by rumor and whispers about how these tomb raiders had unwittingly unleashed an ancient and terrible curse. The rumors had begun to spread almost immediately after Carter and Lord Carnarvon had discovered Tutankhamun's tomb and its wealth of treasures. In December 1922, a story circulated that when Carter had returned to his home in Luxor, he found that a cobra had slithered into his birdcage and devoured his pet canary. The cobra was a symbol of ancient Egyptian royalty, and the event was interpreted as an omen of impending doom. Within weeks of the newspapers first reporting on the mummy's curse, Lord Carnarvon was dead. Although he appeared to have died from septicemia and pneumonia brought about by an infected mosquito bite, it soon became common opinion that he was only the first to be killed by the curse of the pharaohs, a supernatural punishment for disturbing the sacred resting place of the boy king. As you heard in the story, legend has it that at the very moment Lord Carnarvon died, all the lights in Cairo were mysteriously extinguished, and a fierce desert wind tore through the vast city. At that precise instant, over 2,000 miles away, at the Lord's estate in England, his favorite dog Susie let out an agonized howl and dropped dead herself. When a doctor performed the first autopsy on the mummified remains of Tutankhamun, he found a healed wound on the pharaoh's left cheek. Some say the scar was in the exact same spot as the fatal mosquito bite that killed Lord Carnarvon. Arthur Conan Doyle, author of the Sherlock Holmes novels, claimed that an evil elemental spirit created by ancient Egyptian priests was responsible for Carnarvon's death, and the media was whipped into a frenzy. Stories of vengeful mummies and esoteric curses were splashed across newspapers the world over, and the mysterious deaths just kept on coming. An American railroad tycoon named George J. Gould visited the tomb in early 1923, He developed a terrible fever almost immediately afterwards, and was dead by May. The next month, Egyptian playboy Prince Ali Kamel Fahmy Bey was shot to death in a hotel room by his own wife. She emptied the cylinder of her six-shot revolver into his back. Rumor has it, he had taken a tour of the tomb only a few weeks earlier. Sir Archibald Douglas Reed x-rayed the mummy of Tutankhamun just before it was handed over to a museum in 1924. He fell ill the next morning, and 3 days later, he too had perished. The body count was rising. Hugh Evelyn White, a prominent British archaeologist and one of the first Europeans to enter the pharaoh's tomb, killed himself in 1924. Depending on the story, he either hanged himself or shot himself in the back seat of a cab, but not before allegedly writing, in his own blood, "I have succumbed to a curse which forces me to disappear." Then Arthur Mace, a member of the excavation team, died in agony in 1928 of suspected arsenic poisoning. The corpse of Captain Richard Bethel, Lord Carnarvon's secretary and second man to enter the tomb behind Carter himself, was found in the bed of an elite gentleman's club in London in 1929. He had been smothered to death by an unknown assailant. Shortly before his demise, a series of mysterious, devastating fires had broken out in his house, where numerous items of Tutankhamun's treasure had been on display. Speaking of fires, American Egyptologist and dear friend of Lord Carnarvon, Aaron Ember, burned to death in a house fire in 1926. Rumor has it he could have escaped easily, but chose to run back into the flames to save a precious manuscript he had been working on, an English translation of the Egyptian Book of the Dead. Howard Carter, the man who actually discovered the ancient tomb, publicly dismissed all notion of curses as nothing but foolish superstition and coincidence. He died from Hodgkin's disease in 1939, aged 64. Though some say the curse got him in its own way, as he died bitter and alone, unmarried, no children, with only a handful of people to attend his funeral. Before he died, Carter gave his friend Sir Bruce Ingram an odd gift, a paperweight made from an ancient mummified hand. It came adorned with a scarab bracelet, inscribed with hieroglyphs announcing, "Cursed be he who moves my body. To him shall come fire, water, and pestilence." Shortly after receiving this gift, Ingram's house burned to the ground. It was rebuilt and promptly destroyed by a flood. Numerous theories have been offered to explain this so-called curse of the pharaohs. Aside from supernatural revenge, it has been suggested that opening the tomb may have released some form of lethal radiation, a deadly, trapped fungal spore, or an ancient strain of long-dormant bacteria that contributed to so many odd, unexplained deaths. While many, like Carter himself, feel that the mummy's curse was nothing more than a fanciful story, it is undeniable that an unusually large number of those involved in the excavation of the tomb seemed to meet with mysterious and often gruesome ends. The idea of ancient curses has been with us for a long time. In tombs across Egypt, curses have been found painted or engraved into the walls, aimed to terrify potential grave robbers or punish any temple priests who failed in their devotion to maintain these sacred tombs. An account from 1699 describes how a Polish traveller purchased two supposedly cursed mummies in Alexandria. Whilst attempting to transport them back to Europe, his ship was ravaged by ferocious storms and monstrous waves, while he himself was plagued with nightmares and visions of two ghostly spectres stalking the decks. The storms did not die away until the mummies had been hurled overboard. A noted Egyptologist named Zawi Hawass has described coming across numerous curses in the ruins and tombs he has visited across the country. On the day he excavated at a site known as Kom Abu Bilo, his cousin suddenly dropped dead. Exactly a year later, his uncle perished, and a year to the day after that, so did his aunt. A few years later, whilst transporting two ancient child mummies to a museum, his dreams were haunted by the ghosts of dead children. The nightmares reportedly only ceased when the mummies were reunited with the embalmed corpse of their father in the museum display. Such terrifying, doom-laden curses are by no means restricted to ancient Egypt. They can be found across the world and throughout the history of countless races, religions, and long-dead civilizations. Amir Timur, better known as Tamerlane, first ruler of the Timurid dynasty, was an undefeated warlord born in Central Asia in the 14th century. At one point, his empire stretched from China to Turkey, and estimates suggest his military campaigns claimed the lives of over 17 million people. When he died in 1405, he was buried in a vast tomb in what is now modern-day Uzbekistan. Legend has it that inscribed on his coffin were the words, "When I rise from the dead, the world shall tremble. Whomsoever opens my tomb shall unleash an invader more terrible than I." Ignoring this potential curse, on the 19th of June 1941, Soviet researchers exhumed Tamerlane's body on the orders of their leader, Joseph Stalin. 3 days later, fascist dictator Adolf Hitler launched Operation Barbarossa, the largest military invasion of all time. An estimated 26 million people died as the German army swept across the Soviet Union in a seemingly unstoppable wave. All hope seemed lost. In November 1942, Tamerlane was hastily reburied with a full Islamic funeral. Shortly afterwards, Hitler's invading army was defeated at the Battle of Stalingrad. Coincidence? Such curses are not just limited to protecting tombs from desecration. Everyday objects can seemingly carry their own reputation for causing deadly misfortune. There are reports of cursed mirrors, wedding dresses, chairs, vases, haunted dolls, and even phone numbers. There are cursed paintings of weeping children, disturbing portraits painted in the artist's own blood, and perhaps the most infamous of all, the Hope Diamond. The story of the Hope Diamond curse begins with a French merchant named Jean-Baptiste Tavernier, who sold the wondrous blue gem to King Louis XIV of France in 1668. Legend goes that whilst traveling through India, Tavernier had prized the diamond from the eye socket of a sacred Hindu idol and stolen it away. A curse was placed on anyone who owned the precious jewel from that day forward. Tavernier himself was supposedly struck down with a terrible fever shortly after selling the diamond, and was then torn apart in the street by wild dogs. King Louis XIV died of gangrene, while all but one of his royal heirs never made it past childhood. His favorite mistress, who often wore the diamond, was accused of witchcraft and fled to a convent, her reputation ruined. When she died, her children were forbidden to mourn for her. The king's minister of coin was permitted to wear the jewel once for a special state occasion. Shortly afterwards, he fell out of favor with the court and was thrown in prison for the rest of his life. The Hope Diamond was passed down through the family. Louis XV died a hated man after bringing France to the brink of bankruptcy and rebellion. His grandson, Louis XVI, and his wife, the famous Marie Antoinette, were both executed during the French Revolution, their heads lopped off with a guillotine. They had both worn the fabulous blue gem on numerous occasions. Marie Antoinette's lady-in-waiting was also allowed to handle the diamond. She was torn apart by an angry mob, her head stuck on a pike, and paraded in front of the palace windows. After the revolution, the jewel was stolen and briefly disappeared from history. When it re-emerged in the hands of a Dutch diamond cutter, it seemed the curse was still very much in effect. The Dutchman died in poverty after the precious gem was stolen by his own son, who killed himself shortly afterwards. And so it went on. An actress who wore the diamond on stage was shot by a member of the audience on opening night. Shortly afterwards, a Russian prince bought the gem and was murdered by revolutionaries. A Greek merchant lost control of his car and drove off a cliff, plunging hundreds of feet to a grisly death. The Sultan of Turkey gave the diamond to his favorite wife. She was stabbed to death by a thief, and the Sultan himself was overthrown and imprisoned in a rebellion in 1909. His bodyguard was captured by the mob and slowly strangled to death. It seems that a great deal of the legend of the Hope Diamond curse was invented, or at least embellished, by French jeweler Pierre Cartier in order to create an air of mystery and attract potential wealthy buyers. However, it is undeniable that many of the diamond's supposed owners met with terrible misfortune, death, disease, and bankruptcy. One of the last owners of the Hope Diamond was American socialite Evelyn Walsh McLean. She kept the diamond until she died in 1947, during which time her 9-year-old son was killed after being hit by a car. Her daughter died of an accidental overdose of sleeping pills. Her marriage broke down, and her husband was declared insane and confined to a psychiatric institution. Evelyn herself died owing huge amounts of money, and the diamond was sold by her grandchildren to cover her debts. Finally, in 1958, the Hope Diamond, worth an estimated $250 million, was donated to the Smithsonian Museum for nothing. But it seems the cursed jewel managed to claim one final victim before it went on display. James Todd, the postman who delivered the diamond to the museum, crashed his truck on the way home, shattering his leg. He crashed again almost immediately, this time damaging his head. His wife and dog died prematurely, and shortly afterwards, his house, along with all his possessions, burned to ashes. So what do you think? Are these legendary curses real? Does entering an ancient tomb really bring a deadly dose of bad luck? Can a simple object really be powerful enough to cause such terrible misfortune? Or are the mysterious deaths that we attribute to these curses mere coincidence? Is the true power of such things purely psychological, only affecting those that truly believe themselves cursed? Either way, if you have a spare $250 million lying around, do think twice before purchasing any blue diamonds. Who knows what doom would come a-knocking at your door? We would love to hear your own thoughts and ideas about these creepy curses. If you have enjoyed this episode, please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at PixelElixir, and subscribe at BitesizedFrights.com so that you never miss any of our terrifying tales. This has been a Pixel Elixir production, narrated by Chris Kay. Thank you for listening. Until the next bite, my friends.